always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
All right, so we'll go ahead and let's see. Did you want to say anything about LeBron? Like, did you, before we dive into the super comments? I mean, he's probably going to come up in the super comments, but anything specifically that you want to get into before?
I guess this isn't like specifically anything, because I think obviously there's not enough words to describe how incredible he's been, but it's still amazing to watch. I'm sure this happens across sports, Anthony. Obviously, I don't watch other sports, but there was a moment where LeBron smelled blood, and there's this thing that all the great players do where they just, I see some weakness coming up. I'm punching it in. He hit this three to cut it to six, and you could see like him smile going the timeout, like, oh, no. You guys can't start cheering yet. Like, he's like looking at every person.
I think it was five.
Was it five? Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the next play was the SGA play, I believe. But in any case, LeBron is like looking at the crowd like, no, don't, like, I'm still here. You don't get to chase us out of this building yet. And that was cool for LeBron to still have that moment. And I was thinking that could be his last, like, I hope it's not, but that could be his last road game of this season, right? If things don't break their way in game three and game four. And it's been cool to just watch him have these like different moments where it feels like we were robbed because 2020 was in a bubble, that you didn't get these road performances, right? Where you shut down a road crowd, and 2023, we had it, some of it. And it's been cool this season to watch it in Houston, right? Watch him go just tear down that whole, whoever, the 50% of people that were there, but like in Houston, but like kind of tear that crowd down and then do it in Oklahoma City. I thought that was an awesome moment. And like, there's no moral victories in this series, but getting to watch LeBron do that still for the Lakers, he's been a monster, and he's not getting calls and all that stuff. But I think him and Austin combined for 50% of the Lakers points at 41 years old. He's having half their points and half their assists, him and Austin combined. The Lakers don't have enough help to get through this series, but he's been, I can't ask for anything more from LeBron.
Part of the reason that I really want LeBron to come back next year, Raj, is because I want him to, like, once again be on a team that's actually trying to win. Like, I want LeBron to get one more opportunity to play for a Lakers team, a Lakers front office that is actually competing to win a championship that year. Because that hasn't been the case in, like, 4 years. And he's been excellent in those 4 years, you know? And it's like, it's actually insane that he threw two haymakers in these two games.
Yeah.
You know, like he did everything in his power. You know, he's sitting there sumo wrestling with Lou Dort, you know, for the entirety of this game. And he's also getting rebounds when the Lakers need rebounds. He got a key steal in yesterday's game too, you know, while that game was still close, or in game one. I mean, he got a steal there while that game was still relatively close. He's done everything that we could possibly have asked him to do, especially, you know, in this final chapter of his umpteenth prime. It's just ridiculous that he's able to still do this. And I really hope, like, look, at the end of the day, LeBron has earned himself the opportunity. If he thinks that he has a better chance at winning a championship with the Unks in Golden State, then you can do that. If he thinks, you don't want to call him the Unks in Golden State?
I mean, they have no Jimmy Butler most of next year, Moses Moody out.
Oh, I thought you took issue with me calling them like the Unks in Golden State. It would be Unk team. Like,
oh, no, I agree with you.
Golden State Warriors.
Is Draymond still on that team? I mean,
the Golden Age Warriors. Like, that's like, they're like the golden generation. Like that, they like you would have Steph in his late 30s, you would have LeBron in his 40s, you would have Jimmy Butler in his late 30s coming off of an ACL tear, a complete knee collapse, basically. You would have Kristaps Porzingis coming off of one of the worst illnesses of the last couple of years. He hasn't been the same since he left Boston. No, like I'm saying that, like, I think his best chance at competing for a championship would be with the Lakers next year. But right. I'm saying that also
he has the right to choose. Sure.
Yeah. Like, you know, at the end of the day, if he makes a decision that he thinks is best for him, I'm not going to like begrudge him that decision. He has earned himself that opportunity as a free agent. All I'm saying though, is that like, I really hope that he returns to the Lakers and he plays for a front office that has been lining up this offseason for, you know, the last couple of years, and that he would be able to, you know, enjoy the fruits of that patience. And hopefully, you know, Luka continues his body kind of transformation. Hopefully Austin, you know, maybe takes another step forward again next year. Depending on the amount of money that Austin and LeBron sign for, we'll see what kind of, I think Rui has to be back next year as well. I'm a little lower on Luke Kennard coming back, cause I don't think you can, there's not enough athleticism between Luke, Austin and, Luka.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing
and Bubba Wallace.
You know, what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
But, like, at the end of the day, you know, I just really hope, kind of in terms of what would be fairest to LeBron, I really hope that he seriously considers returning to the Lakers, because this would finally be an opportunity to compete for a championship with LeBron, with Bronny on the roster in this city that he and his family have grown to love, or have, you know, always loved. Like, this is, it's always felt like the kind of slam dunk decision, but it's his to make.
Yeah, I think the only one that I thought maybe could be Cleveland, and then James Harden went and had the most James Harden game ever today, and I think that has probably sealed it. Before we get to the super comments, I just want to shout out, I thought Rui again, just like the shot making is unreal. He's at 60% from three now, I believe, in the playoffs. I'm not sure if that continued.
4-7 from three tonight.
Yeah. So, you know, I think he's gonna keep it there. The Lakers went down 7-0, looked like nothing was going. OKC threw a haymaker in their first punch, and then Rui hits a step back jumper in the mid range, cash, and then hits a three a little bit later to kind of settle the offense down. Again, not a perfect player, but I just try to reiterate, two way wings is a grass is greener type of thing. It's very easy to look across, you know, to the other side and kind of want that player. But
Rui's could be Jake LaRavia.
Okay, there was no need for that, they're on the same team. Rui's been fantastic as just a release valve and guy that you can find late in clock to hit big time shots. So if this is his if he leaves, like I think he's had a really awesome just playoff career, starting with the Memphis series and now going on being just a ridiculous shot maker for this team.
Rui also, there was a moment where LeBron was posting up, the Lakers were going left to right, so I think it was in the second half, and LeBron had the ball in the post and Chet was guarding Rui, and Chet was reluctant to be the help from the corner because he was guarding Rui, and that's super impressive. That says a lot about the playoffs that Rui is having and the series so far that Rui is having, that Chet would be, you know, in a spot where he could send some extra help. I think LeBron was even guarded by, they got the switch that they wanted, and he was guarded by Kayson. Mm-hmm. And Chet had an angle to go and impact the play, but he was still kind of shadowing Rui because he was reluctant to move off of that spot. And you got to be a pretty damn good shooter to keep your defender at home like that. And that's exactly what Rui has kind of become. All right, let's go ahead and dive on in to your guys's super comments, starting with the most important sound on the show. Unless they're playing OKC this year. Or no, they won't play OKC this year because they've been eliminated. All right, Justin Tindall kicks us off with part basketball, part WWE. Give me the 90s refs. And this is the thing. I think the Lakers would welcome physicality if it was allowed to, you know, if that physicality was allowed to exist at the same level for both of those teams. But it felt like every time OKC missed a layup, the referees would wait to see if it fell off of the front of the rim, and then they would call a foul on it. And it was just like, it was just super annoying. There was, I think we already highlighted the play, but there was a play. Yeah. I think you talked about it earlier, but I'll bring it up again. But LeBron catches an over the top pass. He's guarded by Alex Caruso. He, I forget who threw the entry pass, but LeBron catches the ball away from Caruso, winds up being double teamed because everybody is running in to try to defend LeBron there. He clearly gets fouled by everybody who's standing around him, including some fans probably. No foul called there. AJ Mitchell dribbles the ball up the court in response, goes by his guy. I think it was Jackson defends him on the left side of the rim. And Mitchell jumped on the left side of the rim, wasn't able to get the ball to the right side of the rim, and they called a foul for Mitchell, and the whole Lakers bench goes nuts, you know, and they all say, like, where's that over there? And that's how all teams that have played OKC over the last couple of years have felt. Where it's just like, where's that call here? You know, I think the league would be fine with the ticky-tack stuff if it was also called on OKC, but it's not, you know, and that's what kind of bothers me. And then on top of it, Raj, as if the calls themselves weren't garbage enough, as if, like, the game didn't feel, from a physicality standpoint, as one-sided as it felt, as if that wasn't enough in terms of, like, a poor refereeing effort from John Goble and his crew. On top of it all, you had useless and long reviews, you know, and long conversation between like, even if it wasn't a review, remember the call, I think it was Jackson who got fouled by Jalen Williams on a rebound, and then the referees huddled up and decided, nope, we're going double foul, and it's going to be a jump ball at midcourt for some reason. I haven't seen that in a long time, certainly. I just thought that they did not have any grasp whatsoever on this game. And for OKC, like, I'll roll my eyes at them because it's like that big boy meme. Like, I know it ain't you, you know, right? But at the same time, if they're frustrated and the Lakers are as frustrated as they are, it's like, what did the referees get right tonight? It doesn't feel like a whole lot.
No, that's the part, the review part, that being in the building, that just kills a whole vibe of what the game's going on, the flow of it, right? And just, there should be a shot clock to review that long and just keep the,
it's right play, there.
Keep the just call the same. Yeah, or, you know, like, have a 24-second shot clock. I think that's been kind of thrown around as an idea, but it shouldn't take 10 minutes when you have four referees, three in the building and one in Secaucus looking at one play, and you can't come to consensus. Just make a decision, move on, get the game going on. That's one of my more frustrations over even tanking and stuff like that. Like, getting the flow of the game right matters. And I've said I would just remove challenges altogether. I know that's a little bit extreme for people. I think it's done more harm than it's helped.
Well, it's bad when you have those lengthy reviews and they still don't get the call right, you know?
Yeah, so what's the point?
It's still arbitrary. It's still a referee deciding whether or not he's going to, you know, undo one of his buddy's calls, you know. Anywho, Justin Tindall writes, Hall of Famer A.J. Mitchell had more free throws tonight than the all-time leading scorer has in two games. This, by the way, Raj, in a postseason that LeBron has intentionally spent as much time in the post as he has in recent memory.
Yeah.
So he's getting shots at the rim. He only shot 4 3-pointers in this game, and he shot 4 free throws.
Yeah, I think it's him and Embiid have the most post-up times in the playoffs. At least that was before the series started, but it feels like I think that will continue. He's been in the post quite a bit. Yeah, he just doesn't get – it's strange to watch. It's one of the most weirdest parts of the LeBron James experience. You think it's like LeBron fans kind of making this myth up, but it's really true. It gets officiated the strangest in the league. And J.J. Redick even mentioned it in post-game today, was this guy gets reffed. I forgot the exact verbiage he used, but basically said LeBron has a very strange whistle, which is
has the worst whistle of any star player ever.
Yeah.
And so that he's ever seen.
Yeah. And that tracks. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Hopefully, you know, in game three, it turns around, but that's kind of been the story of LeBron in a Laker jersey. I was watching obviously in Cleveland, but watching it every night, seeing just the amount of physicality that he has to take. And just kind of eat right. He could dish out a certain amount of physicality as well, but he's not allowed the same bar as other teams are. So, but yeah, that's frustrating. 5 free throws in 2 games. 1 free throw in game one. 1 free throw. All the drives, all the contact. You tell me Lou Dort played a clean as a whistle game, did not foul LeBron once on any of the drives. All their reaches hit all ball. Every reach on the drive. I feel
like Lou Dort probably isn't even allowed to play in their scrimmages because he would just hurt all their guys.
Lou, go
shoot free throws. Just go over there. We're gonna run fives. Like, just go over there for a bit while we do that, because we don't need you. Like, that's probably why J Dub has been hurt as much as he is, because that's who he's guards him
with Lou Dort
in practice. Is Lou Dort. Yeah. Let's Run UNLV writes, getting lit up by McCain straight up sucks. I hate OKC. No, the thing is, McCain was like one of the more exciting rookies of his class, and then he got hurt, and then he, you know, came back and was not the same as he was his rookie year. And Philly was up against it tax wise. And they dumped him for a 1st and 3 seconds. Now we'll see what they're able to turn that stuff into. But for like OKC, oh, the other thing too, Raj, that like I don't think OKC gets enough credit for, it's Dodgers-esque the way that they're able to keep their guys healthy. You know, you'll have guys get there who maybe have checkered injury histories before they get there. They're there, they get healthier, they leave, and then immediately they're hurt again. Like, they from just an organizational standpoint, like, they do basically everything right. They just make themselves so much more annoying by way of the way that they tell their guys to play.
They've extended every marginal advantage you can get into a mile. Like, anything you can grab. Finding A.J. Mitchell in the draft at whatever 20-something that they drafted him at to be a starting-level guard on this team is ridiculous. And that goes down their roster. There's not a player they play that has really too big of a weakness. Like, there's nothing that you can take away from. Isaiah Joe would be, again, the best shooter on 18 teams in the league, but because he's not this two-way force, he doesn't play large minutes on their team, but you plop him in other rotations, and Isaiah Joe probably plays 33 minutes a game, but on the Oklahoma City, he's like a specialist on their team. And a specialist is not just, I take threes, I can attack closeouts, I can fit in a defensive scheme, my rotations are on point. Like, all that is fit into like a specialist on the Thunder is really different from a lot of teams because your ask is very high. You're fitting into this roster and this culture that has been established. So no, they're incredible. You mentioned Presti, how amazing he is. Mark Diagonal, same age as LeBron James, just an incredible mind of basketball. So and again, they have the best player in the league, who I think took that from Jokic either this year or last year, wherever you want to take it from him. Best player in basketball plus the best roster equals a lot of damn winning is going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and maybe best front office. So, yeah.
No, not maybe. Easily.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
You know what team Isaiah Joe was on before he went to the Thunder?
I believe he was on the Philadelphia 76ers, which Joel Embiid has tweeted about. So,
He's subtweeting his own boss. He's subtweeting Daryl Morey.
That's not even the most egregious. They turned Josh Giddey into Alex Caruso. You know how I was livid at that trade
without
a pick, and I heard national people go, "Oh, you know, that's actually quite an even trade because Josh Giddey is gonna, you know, he needed the ball." I was like, did we watch the same playoffs? Did I not just watch whoever they lost to not guard Josh Giddey for entire stretches of Minnesota, right? I think Minnesota or whoever beat them in the playoffs. Did I just not watch them not guard Josh Giddey for a whole series? And they turned that guy into a first team all defensive player and didn't give up one of their bajillion picks. And now that person doesn't run the Bulls anymore because they are fired probably 5 years too late. But in any case,
I think. A take that I've been kind of tailoring or whatever is I think we kind of overrate offensive engines in terms of like assets in the NBA, and mid-tier offensive engines are seen as more valuable than elite defenders. And I think we get that really, really wrong. You know, you look at the way that like somebody like Rudy Gobert is kind of talked about, or somebody like Luke Dort is talked about, or Chet is talked about, or Caruso is talked about. And give me one or two of those guys any day of the week over somebody who has to have the ball in their hands. It's the THT conversation. It's the THT Caruso conversation all over again, where the Lakers decided like, hey, this guy, you know, can create more than Caruso can off of the dribble, and therefore we believe in this guy's ability long term. Also, he was clutch, and there's some other stuff going on there behind the scenes. But like at the end of the day, the Lakers undervalued the defender who was a key actual starter even on a championship team. The game that they clinched the title, they basically said, "All right, no more fucking around. We're gonna start Alex Caruso in game 6 and they wind up leading that game by 40. And then they turn around and be like, all right, so whatever you did in that game, that was cute. We believe in Talen Horton Tucker here moving forward. And I think in the NBA and in the way that we talk about the NBA or the way that it's kind of analyzed, I think mid to even like solid offensive engines have become pretty overrated, whereas these defensive impact guys, the Osser, like the Thompson twins and what those guys have done for their teams respectively, like give me more of those guys than, you know, the example that keeps popping into my head is Austin, because like that's who this conversation the conversation has been about these playoffs. But like there was a debate the other night in the chat as far as like the Austin Caruso debate. And I know that we don't, you know, you didn't want to get into it that night on the show, but that's another example of like what Austin does is a lot louder. It is really difficult to have the ball in your hands as much as it does, but it's also really effing difficult to defend the guys that Alex Caruso was asked to defend on a night by night basis. And this guy is on the verge again of being a key cog in 3 different championship seasons. The furthest Reeves has gotten has been the conference finals. And you look around the league at like Donovan Mitchell is overpaid. Tyler Hero is overpaid. Emmanuel Quickley is overpaid. Like all of these like solid to good offensive engines, they get all of this money. Whereas I would much rather spend, I would rather, you know, especially on a team that has Luka as your elite offensive engine, give me a whole bunch of Alex Caruso surrounding Luka Doncic. And I bet that'll be a pretty damn good team.
It would, but I think this is where it gets tough. Like, Caruso is amazing, but he averages 18 minutes a game, and I'm not a counting stat guy, but 6 points, and his impact is way farther than that. But I think Austin is better than the players you're talking about that fall below this baseline of, like, yes, do you probably lean DN3 in the playoffs if you have everything else filled? Yes, but I would argue the shot creator that can actually do that is the most valuable. But like, that's the hardest player to replace, in my opinion. Like, replacing, there's this conversation around Jalen Brunson, right? Is he a number one? I still have concerns about a 6'2" guy being your main creator. But in any case, Jalen Brunson is the most, like, he's the toughest to replace, in my opinion, there. Him and Ananobi. But Ananobi even has been an offensive monster in these playoffs. He's hurt now.
Bye, everyone.